Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to yet another episode of the Breakthrough Podcast. I keep on saying I'm excited for every episode because I have some wonderful guests that come on the podcast. But today I would say I'm really honored because the guest I have has been on one of my top lists. He's a superstar DJ, king of house music, absolutely stellar at his performances. We have DJ Ivan all the way from Bangalore on my small little podcast, the Breakthrough Podcast. Welcome to the show, Ivan, sir.
It's such a pleasure to be here. And with so much of planning, it had to happen sooner than later. But I'm really glad to be here on the Breakthrough Podcast, Rohan. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited about this chat with you.
You're like a superstar DJ. And it's absolutely shocking for me because it was just like one DM on Instagram. And you're like, yeah, let's do it. And I think we got on a phone call within 15 minutes of us chatting.
And a 1 hour chat.
on the phone, I was like, sir, we've spoken so much on the phone call. I said, I wish I could just record this. But that just shows that, you know, what a humble person you are. I mean, whoever I've spoken to about you and whoever spoken about you to me has always said, super chilled out person, amazing, amazing personality.
There's nothing so not to happy. Be humble about. We're just playing other people's records. It's as simple as that. Some played better than the others. But at the end of the day, we're just playing other people's records. So there's nothing not to be humble about.
I know you've been in the industry for the last 3 decades and lots of experience, lots of learnings. So I just want to kind of make sure that we can get some tiny bits of the experiences you've learned and, you know, could probably help us and, you know, get into in a much better position when we're DJing. I want to just start off. How did DJ Ivan happen? Were you born and raised in Bangalore or
yeah,
where were you?
Born and raised in Bangalore, went to boarding school in Bishop Cotton's. And I always loved music. And my early influences were new wave music, which was Haircut 100, Spandau Ballet, Duran. And that was my early influences in music because we used to go to Abu Dhabi for our holidays. My mom used to work there. So we were influenced by the radio and that's all we heard. And that was the early 80s and we were kids then. And that was all the music that influenced me when I started, and then I just became heavily into that kind of music, and then I started to follow the charts and what was number one, and it just came naturally to me. And I as a kid, even when I was with my grandparents and everything, I always played records and you might have seen a picture on Instagram where I'm like 5 years old playing records.
Yes, so I was getting to that.
It's just I've always been surrounded by music, but of course they listen to country music and stuff, which I never ever liked. But I really started liking music after getting influenced by all the new wave music from the early 80s.
So you started off your career, very, very early, and you stuck to something for the last 30 years. You've stuck to house music. When was the first time you heard house music? And, you know, when did you think, okay, let me do something in this particular genre?
When I played house music in the, so I started in 92 in this club called Time and Again. And okay. I was assistant to an African DJ, and then he was there for 6 months and then he left. So the tradition in those days, they would play Everything I Do It For You and yeah. What is that? Right Here Waiting, Richard Marx and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
At the end of the night, and these couples would slow dance. And before that, they would play like rock and roll music. But when I took over from him, and I was super daring, and I was like, I didn't give a damn. I just wanted to do what I wanted to do. And considering that was the only club in Bangalore, and if I lost my job, I wouldn't have had work. I was really, really one who wanted to take chances. So I said, no, I'm not going to play any of this. I'm just going to play low BPM stuff, which was later on called hip hop. And then I would play higher BPM stuff, which some of them were house, some of them were like Hadaway, What Is Love, and you know, Culture Beat, yeah, and Mr. Wayne and stuff like that. Swamp Thing, Atlantic Ocean's Waterfall. So, but you know, we never knew they were house records and we never knew it was house music. And we started to play David Morales and Todd Terry and Frankie Knuckles and stuff like that because it sounded good. And it was the only club in Bangalore and we had only vinyl. There was no CDs, there was no tapes, there was no nothing. So there was only vinyl. The owner was in Australia. He would send us 10 records every 3 months and we still had the best music in Bangalore. But
oh my God.
Yeah, but those, they were like really, that was Kim Sims, Too Blind to See It. There's CC Peniston, Finally. There's Where Love Lives, Alison Limerick and stuff like that, which now when we see defected posts and stuff, they call it early house. But we didn't know that. We didn't know that. We were just playing it because it sounded good. So there was no real conscious decision that, I'm going to play house. We just played anything that sounded good.
All right. And I think in terms of house, I think I've heard somewhere that you were proud of saying that, you know, Bangalore was the first city that got house music introduced to India. And I think you were one of the pioneers who spread it across slowly across the country. So
there's a lot of talks and there's a lot of, everybody says, oh, we started it and we started it. So I don't want to be another one saying we started it. But I think, and I didn't travel much to the other cities as well. I was just a small town Bangalore guy. So I don't even know what was playing in the other cities. But I felt that, yeah, we were playing really post 95 when I finished Time and Again, my first residency, and I moved to another place called The Club, which was a hut out of Bangalore. So all the pubs would close at 11:30 and then everyone would come to this place called The Club, which was just a hut in a resort.
Okay.
And we would be on till 4 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. And we would have 2,000 people on Saturday, 1,000 people on Friday, 1,000 people on Wednesday. And there we started to push further into a lot more cooler music. It was very hip-hop oriented. It was Bone Thugs and Harmony. It was Coolio. It was Tupac and all that stuff that was happening in 95, 96. But we were also, at the end of the night, playing a lot of cool house music. A lot of 90s rave. A lot of hard floor remixes of Yeke Yeke. Stuff like that, which were like really cool. There's Robert Miles' Children Broke at that time.
I remember.
You know, and so we were playing a lot of stuff. And never once were we saying that we were playing house music. We just had a really strong dance music culture. It was united. Everybody came to one place and danced to one type of music. And I could just play anything I wanted, anything. So, you know, to have the creative freedom and to play whatever you wanted to play, we started to play cooler music. And I started to buy my own music. I had a friend who used to fly for Emirates Airlines and used to go to Frankfurt once a month. So he would get me 10 records once a month and that would be it. But obviously we would, you know, get DJ mags along with them and we'll look at the charts and we'll choose music and we'll play. So we played a lot of cool music, and I think I can't say for sure, but I think that we were one of the early guys to play house music without even knowing we were playing house music.
Wow. You've been like one of the masters at sourcing music. So you used to actually travel back to a lot of the countries, travel to UK quite often to actually source some records.
That happened much later, actually. So I was getting these records, coming in and buying them and playing them. And then I joined from the hut one day. Sanjay Narang's sister happened to come to The Club. She saw me, gave me her card. And the next thing I know, I was offered a job in India's biggest club, which was 3 flights up in Mumbai. So in 97, I moved to Mumbai and I spent 2 years as a resident DJ of 3 flights up. So then they were getting the records from London and bringing it back and stuff like that. But obviously, Bombay was a huge culture shock for me because we were playing like really different music in The Club where I was in Bangalore. So it took some adapting because a lot of it was oriented by the, you know, the Hirappanna CDs and the B-Sexies and the Macarenas and the Saturday Nights. That was what was big in Bombay. And a lot of the stuff that we had was just vinyl, which so initially people were not even dancing to a lot of the music that I was playing. And it took some time for me also to try and adjust to that and for them to adjust to what I was playing. And it was a bit scary to start with, but but then, you know, after some time it started to really work. J49 of course was always playing cool music and but they were more on the up-tempo trancier side and not so much on the soulful housey side, but they were always playing like really cool music as well. So so that I spent a couple of years in Bombay. Then from there, Channel V came to do a party in 3 Flights Up, saw me playing there, and they took me from there to be their touring DJ all over the country. So I immediately went from just being a resident DJ into a touring DJ. And that was a huge turning point in my career because I could come base back in Bangalore and just travel every weekend to a different city. And then we were doing all these massive road shows with Shaggy, Diana King, Sting, you know, Def Leppard, The Works. So that was, so a lot of it was, I was in the right place at the right time. And I was a bit lucky as well to be there. And from Channel V, Bacardi tied up with Channel V and we did Bacardi Blast, which was on TV and on ground. Wow. And so when Channel V stopped the Bacardi Blast on TV, then I moved to Bacardi. And when I moved to Bacardi in 2000, then Bacardi said, you go to London and choose DJs for us to tour with for Bacardi Blast.
Wow.
So that's when I first went to London in 2000. And then I made friends and with the record shops and all the DJs and Ministry of Sound and everything. And so, yeah, so from there, 2000 to 2010, for 10 years, every summer and every winter, I went to London to buy records and come back. So I would buy 200 records and then I would use them for 6 months. And then I would go back and buy another 200 new records and use them for 6 months.
My God, that's crazy. Like, that's absolutely crazy. So tell us about the whole sourcing. So, I mean, from picking up records physically to now, you know, everyone's on Beatport and Traxos and all of these things. And you've actually, I mean, whenever I just look at your, check your sets out, even when you're playing your live streams, one thing which differentiates DJ Ivan is music choice. I mean, you pick up tracks which no one's actually heard of. Even if you've heard of it, the way you mix it is really amazing. So till now, what's your workflow? How do you source music? Where do you get it from? Because definitely, I would say your music stands out. I mean, you mentioned earlier you're playing other people's records, but your music selection is amazing. So where do you source your music and how do you do it?
Thank you, Rod. That really means a lot. And for somebody who, like you, knows your music, that really means a lot. But I think it comes, A, from the experience. Mm-hmm. A lot of it comes from experience. And B, from it being, for me, it has been a science. It is record selection and music history. And I'm not one of those guys who will play a record that doesn't mean anything to me. I have to know where it's sampled from. I have to know the label it comes from. I have to know the producer who made it. I have to know that whole story of the song before I decide that I will put this into my playlist. So, you know, a lot of it goes with the background work that I do. Every time I hear something interesting, and obviously my source now with the internet the way it is to hear DJs who I love and mm-hmm. follow their podcasts or their radio shows and whatever. And then I'm thinking in my mind, how can I incorporate this? So when I went to buy records in London, it was the same. I went there and, you know, there were already a lot of records that are out there, which our Indian audiences won't relate to. But at the same time, I would have to buy a record because it's £6 a record and it has to count. Nowadays, we don't care. It's digital. I mean, I can buy hundreds of songs at $1.50 and it doesn't matter to me. Make much more money and digital is just disposable. You don't have to pay excess baggage. You don't have to pass through customs, you know, so it's just doesn't matter. But that record you bought had to mean so much and it meant that you had to play it. So in your mind, you're thinking, how do I do this? If I take this record back, the guys have not heard it in India, but Summer Moon, I'll play before everybody else plays, but there's something in this that the Indian audience will like, you know? So there are a lot of those big tunes that we played and we just opened them from the cover, play them from the first time, and then people later on would say, oh, this is great. And when we first played them, like, what shit music has he brought from London? So I used to have a residency at a club called Spin on Wednesday nights. And when I came back from London, that would be the first night I would do. So we'll open them from the packets and we will play them. And there will be a lot of excitement. And then there'll be a lot of people is like, oh, this time he's brought back some really shitty music. And then 2 weeks later, it's like everybody's going nuts. For example, Lazy, it's just not an obvious record. Mm-hmm. It plays for 8 minutes or 9 minutes and it's not an obvious record. And we have gone and I've heard Express 2 in London playing it and we've seen people at Heaven going mad. And then you know, right? This is a sure shot. You know it's a sure shot record. You know it is not something that will happen immediately, but if it's happening there, surely it must happen. Yeah. So there's a lot of science and a lot of thought and a lot of background that goes into buying every single record. The physicality of the medium is just immense. And then of course, knowing all the DJs in London, all the guys in all the record shops, now they have grown up with dance music culture from their grandfathers. So you know the kind of knowledge they have. And I would think when I first went to London, that I am a really knowledgeable guy in dance music. And then I would sit among them and I would just sit and be stunned at the kind of knowledge that they all possess. And, you know, dance music didn't happen by accident in London. It happened because those guys have some serious dance music culture from the radio, from their forefathers, whatever it might be. And we were just starting to learn these things. So I went there and just sat among them like a sponge, you know, and just absorb. And, you know, I would take back some 10% of what they would already know. But it was just something that was a revelation for me to just sit among them. And they were all the best DJs and the best record stores. And so I would spend like 2 weeks from morning 9 to evening 6 in a record store. And I would look through about, say, 200, 300, and I would buy about 10.
I think because it meant a lot, because if you're paying a certain amount and getting it here every penny counted, you know, of what you're getting. And I think one thing which I notice about you is, and even while I speak to you, sir, we're not actually looking at each other. It's an audio podcast. But I mean, just when you talk about house music, there's that charm, there's that particular gloom in your face that I can always say. Even when you're doing your live streams, or when you're explaining a song, or you know, it's something which is phenomenal. I think one of the major reasons why you've sustained for the longest period is your love for music. And I don't really know anyone, including I'll be guilty. I mean, the amount of research, if you mention that you literally need to know where this track was sampled from, which label, and who's the artist, and what's the story, I think that's phenomenal. I mean, if you could just share some examples of some tracks that you love the story of the track and then eventually played it, and give us an example of that kind of a scenario that happened.
There's so much. It just happens even till today. And, you know, when I do my bedtime stories happen by accident, purely by accident. It was never intended to be there was no planning, there was nothing. And initially it started to be a little bit of melodic techno or whatever.
Yes,
and then
yes.
After some time, I took the audience with me. And they were like so open-minded. They would come wherever I went. And then, you know, we started calling something the golden hour. And then we start to play like we're playing this French record called Bougie Bougie now, which is like an old disco classic from the 70s, which Little Louis Vega dropped last night
of course.
His set. And, you know, and I'm playing it on Bedtime Stories and he's playing it in New York. And it's like the people, they just came along with us. Then we go into, say, Bicep and we play breakbeats. And then we start to play a whole sequence of breakbeats with early 90s rave and pianos and stuff like that, you know. And it's up-tempo, but yet soulful. And there's so many big records that we're just continuing to break, you know. Jadaji's Both of Us, like everybody puts it on their stories. It's unheard of. It's like the dance music culture that we continue to build around house music. And you know, I've never put my music into a genre. Played a lot of EDM when EDM was big, and everybody shat on me saying that, you know, he's mainstream and he's this and he's that. And I just take a record at face value for what it sounds like, what my audience will react to, what I feel most importantly will work. And you know, a lot of the time I get, when I tour everywhere and I get resident DJs telling me, oh sir, it's because it's you, these people will dance to anything you play.
I agree. So I agree with that with a lot of other DJs, but I would disagree in your case, because I genuinely see people enjoying your music. I see a lot of people who don't necessarily come in for that kind of music, but they end up, you know, enjoying the, because your selection is what does it. And I mean, I definitely know many audiences who dance to techno because, okay, there's a certain artist playing, but I can disagree. I mean, in your sets, no one's dancing because it's you. Trust me, it's the music.
So yeah, so the, like I said, and then I did those trips twice a year. I started to grow my record collection, and then my best friend Spencer is now the biggest vinyl record distributor in the UK, Prime Distribution, and wow. He's like a brother to me. So then he just started to give me records from his godown, because for him, he's like, man, this is pennies for me. Just take it. You know? So then it just became a problem to carry so much back because of excess baggage. And, you know, fortunately, Jet Airways started and we could take 40 odd kilos. So that was a relief. And then sometimes customs would be a little picky, but most times they would say, okay, vinyl records are obsolete, take them and go. So, but yeah, that is the pride of my whole career, and my collection revolves around those records. And after 2008, sadly, there was no more records. So we closed the cupboards and put them away. And then when lockdown happened, 3 days, we're all frozen on our phone wondering what to do next.
Yeah.
And I came down and I opened the cupboards and I said, let me start looking at these. And then I realized, it's just, I have such a nice story to tell. Let me just go out to the world and tell them my real dance music story. Whether it be the vinyl, whether it be old school hip hop, whether it be disco, whether it be whatever it might be. And let me just be something that I could not be for all these years. And fortunately, it turned out right. And the people started to understand me and what I was trying to tell them. And once I had their attention, I could develop from there. And it's all about just telling stories. When the lockdown started, everybody started to come out, like every DJ in the country came out full swing, all guns blazing and banging out dance floor friendly music. And I did that too, because that's all we knew.
Of course.
But within about 2 weeks, I realized end user experience really counted. And I started to put myself on that other side of that phone. And then I started to think like an end user. When I am playing here, what is he receiving? How is he reacting? What is the kind of music that I need to play to hold this guy's attention? How do I need to speak to him? What do I need to tell him? You know, everybody said Instagram, people will log on for 7 minutes and log out.
Yeah.
And we had people, 50, 60 people at the end of 7 hours still listening to music. So then we knew we were doing something right, and we had people who were into it and who were wanting to listen to music because it was a great escape for them, like it was for me. And it was like a two-way thing. So yeah, I started to understand really quickly what went into making a good broadcast. And I just developed my own style. And obviously, beating the algorithms, we had to talk a little more.
Yes.
So then if you're going to talk a little more, it just cannot be shouting out people. It had to be something relevant. So then I started to introduce music. And I started to talk about the music. And I started to talk about it like I talk on my radio show. So I mean, the back-end work, and even now the back-end work, Rohan, is phenomenal. I mean, the reason why I ran 7-hour sets is because I could develop a bigger database of music that I could play without getting flagged.
Yes.
That was the primary objective. And then I would sometimes run the sets on another Instagram account on the previous day to myself and see what was getting flagged and take it out of the sets.
Oh my God. You should do that?
Yeah.
Actually?
Yeah. So, you know, wow. It was intense, the kind of, and still is, the kind of preparation that goes into doing that. And, you know, it's zero money. I haven't earned a rupee since March. So it's just only buying music and bringing fresh music and putting it together and researching it and make sure that nothing gets flagged. And of course, there are a lot of people trolling me because, you know, I don't know, suddenly the paper started to write about it in Bombay and Chennai and Bangalore and everywhere else all over the country. So there were a lot of people that were coming in, and there were a lot of people trolling me, you know, some saying, why are you talking? So I'm like, man, I have to talk, because if I don't talk, the algorithms won't get broken up and I will get flagged and it will get taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy is like, why aren't you touching any buttons? The music I'm playing is like, each song needs to be mixed once in five minutes. I've done this for 28 years. All I need to move is that Pioneer digital display till the same BPM and press a hot cue. Like, what do I need to touch buttons for?
No, actually, there are a lot of people who touch unnecessary buttons. That's the reason probably they assume, you know, if you just, most of the people are just putting their booth monitors on and off just to make sure that they're doing something. So maybe,
we had another guy who was like, it was 2:30 in the morning and I started at 10 o'clock. And he's like, so what is the big deal? You're playing a Danny Howell's track. So I'm like, there is no big deal. I'm playing a Danny Howell's track, but there's no big deal. I'm not playing Shape of You. I'm playing a Danny Howell's track. He's like, play your own music.
Oh,
why are you playing Danny Howell's music? I'm like, if I could play 7 hours of my own music, I'll be Pink Floyd. I won't be playing on Instagram to 100 people. It's like...
Crazy, crazy, crazy. So, but you know, being on the other side of the phone, it's like a small community we have. I mean, we have like every weekend we come and we see you and you're talking to all of us. It's like you're right here. You know, for us, it's a very good feeling to see you. And whenever I'm on Instagram and I see Ivan's live, oh man, we have to stop by and say hi. It's something that you can't just miss out. So tell me, how do you have that motivation? Because I mean, for us, individually for us as well, doing live streams was not a lot of, you know, it for me, it didn't really appeal. And maybe I think I'm losing out on a lot of audience for that. But for you, you've kind of stuck around and you've been doing it sincerely and you're doing it and you're actually enjoying it. You know, I can actually see that you're one of the few DJs who've overcome the barrier of, okay, I need a crowd, you know, a virtual crowd is not good enough for me. I mean, I have that barrier. But with you, even I feel like I'm actually at a club, you know, not obviously the lights and lasers won't be there, but the person on the other side of the console is living it like it's the real deal. So yeah, how do you get that motivation? So that,
since you mentioned lights and visuals and everything, a lot of people, in the, and these are mistakes that I think they are mistakes that people were making. And so when we did the first season for about 8 weeks, and then I was clueless after 8 weeks, what am I going to do next? So I took a break for about 2 weeks. And then we had people's children saying, please don't stop the music, and people DMing every day, like, what will we do on Saturday night? Please come back with bedtime stories and stuff like that. But I wanted to come back reinventing, because that's my nature and I want to take it to the next level and whatever. So I sat and analyzed it. But when I thought about it, it's like, first of all, Instagram, the screen orientation is narrow.
Yes.
And then when you put visuals on it, it is really overpowering in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I can't do that. And, you know, so I didn't want it to be too flashy. And then I started to think about the plus points of where I really succeeded. It was, I was bringing people into my home, into my living room, and holding their hand and telling them, this is a nice song, you listen to it.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not asking you to dance because I know you can't dance. So, you know, so I then went full circle and came back and restarted doing the same thing, because I felt that was the best way to go. Very organic, just me in my room, familiarity for a large part. And even I keep my sets quite predictable, and I will only spike it up with 2-3 songs that I can talk about every now and then, so that people will retain. I can come and blast them with 100 new songs every week, but what will happen? Nobody's going to remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's this huge psychological planning that is going in my head constantly before we put this out. And it's a new challenge. It's a different medium. And then, like you said, a lot of the guys started full speed. Then a lot of the people stopped broadcasting. And I can understand why. There is no monetary gain. There's too much of effort. There's so much of flagging. You know, there's trawling. There is so much of stuff that you have to encounter on all sides to make it work. But for me, that challenge has just been a huge stimulation, a creative stimulation. So I've that's my happy space. I don't even know if I go back on ground, whether I would want to stop this. I don't think I'd want to stop it.
You should definitely not. I think that's one of the highlights of the lockdown that at least I've had. But anyways, since you've been touring, like you mentioned, you've been touring a lot of the cities, and I'm pretty sure that Chandigarh and Pune, for that matter, all of these cities have a different vibe. And you were initially, kind of educating people in terms of the music that you're playing. What are the experiences that you've had? I mean, as a country, where do you think India belongs in terms of dance music? We have Bangalore, we have Bombay, even Pune. These 2-3 hubs are kind of there in terms of the nightlife. What's your take on the entire country? I mean, you've traveled a lot of cities.
See, very early in the piece, and I'm talking the early 2000s, when Nickel met Simon Dunmore and Sunburn mm-hmm. came up and whatever, everybody understood very early in the piece that England was the dance music capital, London was the dance music capital, whatever. About 70% of the population had already been exposed to house music, electronic music, and they were dancing to it. So there mm-hmm. was only about 30% potential. We were a country of 1 billion and we had mm-hmm. about 0.5%, 0.3% must be dancing to electronic and house music in those days. And everybody mm-hmm. then understood that the potential and the sheer numbers that we have would make this a fantastic proposition.
Of course.
And in time, even if it went to 2% or 3%, we would still be the largest dance music country in the planet. And enough, it has become that. So that's pretty much just a simple, straightforward explanation to understand that the potential that we have. And very early, I started to do Guwahati. I started to do Cochin, Chandigarh, all the other cooler cities. Pune, of course, was like second home. I did a lot of Pune. And, you know, the bond that I've had with the Pune DJs, I don't think I've had anywhere else. And it was just immense, because I always leave the next day after a show. But Pune was one place I would never want to leave.
Pune's got a lot of love for you. And I've also heard, a little birdie told me that you love a particular biryani from Pune.
Blue Nile. Yeah, well, I love the Pune food. The Pune weather, everything is very similar to Bangalore. And in the early 2000s, it was so similar to Bangalore. The scooters, and the way people dressed. And it was all just almost like second home.
Great. So one more thing I want to ask you is, like, as DJs, so we're all actually where you could say the future of the whole, you know, dance music scene or the house music scene. What do you think are DJs like myself and most other DJs who are just picking up things? We're about in the scene for about 4-5 years now. Where do you think we lack, and where do you think we all need to focus our energies on? Right? Because there's a lot of things that happened that you guys weren't distracted with. Like, you know, social media has happened and Instagram and all of these things have happened. Where do you think we need to put all our focus in, all the upcoming DJs?
I think social media is really important, and I'm learning every day. Like, now I'm obsessed with reels and and making a reel takes so long. and I'm so challenged, but I, you know, I somehow do it because it's just part of it. And I'm, and it's a beautiful arm to supplement what you're doing anywhere else. But I think that's not the be all and the end all. The real connect comes from the people that you connect with physically on a dance floor or in a club. So it's really important to build a following and a loyal following. And and for me, it just comes naturally, because if I see anybody who's sharing the love for music that I have, they will always get a hug. I will always want to eat with them. I will chat with everybody on my DMs. So virtually or physically or anything, I am always for that real connect. And I think that is the most important part. Music is a democracy. Everybody has it now. I have it, you have it, everybody has it. But that human element that you bring into the game, where you're connecting with people in a very real way without acting like a rock star, people somehow just get drawn to that. And it's people from all ages. You know, I play to my children's friends in their schools and colleges, and they will dance to the music. And then I will come back and do a retro night in Shiro on the next day, where people will dance to my music from 1992. And I will follow that same method of connecting with everybody in a real, nice, organic way. So although social media will do the job to an extent, I think you really need to build relationships.
All right. So you've actually had a great career. About 28, 29, 30 years that you've been
28 years, a few weeks ago.
I mean, I'm pretty sure there's been a lot of highs in your career. You've done a lot of great things. Ministry of Sound, you had a stint with them. Channel V, of course, Bacardi, Smirnoff. I mean, these guys have been loyal partners, and you guys have been working together for the longest time. Of course, many other highs in your career. Has there any time been a time where DJ Ivan has had self-doubt, or he's had a bad year or a bad season? Has anything like that come across?
Yeah, there's lots of times like that. And, for a guy who's been around a long time, whenever a new movement emerges in music, whether when electro first came, or drum and bass comes, or techno comes, or whatever, because I am being around and I am always playing and I'm always traveling, I get shat upon. Initially, it used to upset me. It was like when EDM first came and I was playing funky house music, everybody dissed me saying, he plays funky house music. They have saxophone and they have vocals. But now we need to hear music that is just electronic with none of this. So I was uncool. But, you know, for me, it is that soulful element that has always kept me going. So I just stick to that. And I find records that are like that. So, you know, today as well, I might play music that will go across all the boundaries. And they may not be called house music. And they may be called house music. But, you know, I don't put a boundary on anything. And I've had a lot of lows where people would constantly say something, and then suddenly I would become cool again, and it's like, oh, he's this and he's that. So yeah, you just take everything as it comes, but you know, you stay true to yourself and you play the music that you love and you believe in, and it will work out. And you know, this we keep coming back to this lockdown time, because it's been such a revelation for me as well. And you know, we have Notorious broadcasting on Friday, and 30 to 40 people from there will come and stay in my broadcast on Saturday for 7 hours. Now that is such a beautiful thing that has emerged in this lockdown, where everybody has gotten open-minded, everybody is listening to everything, showing love for the DJs and appreciating the music. And that's such a great way to move forward, you know. And I must admit, I don't know anything about Bollywood music, but I've heard so much because I want to go out and support the other guys who are playing Bollywood, whether it's Waggy or it's Notorious or Suketu or anybody else who's playing, all the beautiful female DJs who are also phenomenal, Angel, Rink, Paroma, whoever. So yeah, Akhil's doing a fabulous job with his visual stuff, but it's made everybody a lot more open-minded.
Of course.
So, and that's good for the scene, actually. So it's a lot of positives going into post-lockdown, if ever there's going to be a post-lockdown, but there's a lot of positives going into it for the dance music scene.
What is DJ Ivan going to do after lockdown, your first gig after lockdown? Let's just talk on the good things. What can we expect as an audience?
We've talked about bedtime stories, doing a marathon 12-hour party at Nazara or something, but it will be something like that. It will be a 12-hour party where we would play bedtime stories music, which is more atmospheric, a little more spaced out, less obvious, and doesn't demand you to dance that much. More emotion. I think it's going to be an emotional time. So the music has to play soundtrack to the emotion.
For all the folks who are not going to be in Bangalore that time, please get us a stream for that as well, so we don't miss out on those that amazing party.
Probably when we get to Pune, we'll probably do that there in Pune as well.
Of course.
But yeah, I don't know how, you can't take it for granted. So I don't know whether what we've achieved on the broadcast will transform to dance floors. But we'll have to wait and see. Because, you know, obviously people are less patient on dance floors. They won't want the song to play for that long. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll have to see how it pans out.
Of course. So I also want to ask you, since like you've had an amazing career, you mentioned you've had highs, you've had lows. What tips would you give artists as a career? We've spoken about music, we've spoken about love for music and, you know, sourcing and collecting music. As a career, what are the giveaways? Because you've got a beautiful family, you've got everything settled, you're pretty successful as a DJ. As a career, many people right now are kind of wondering, is this the right career? Many artists I know who are looking for alternate careers. What would be the suggestion or a tip that you would give to us who are looking for this to be a career for over 25 years, 30 years, 40 years, probably even more?
Just endless dedication and passion for the craft. I work 18 hours a day on my music, subconsciously and consciously, but that's all I do. I sleep 6 hours and I work 18 hours on music. I might do some cycling and running and whatever, but the rest of the time it's just focusing on all the music that you can get and present and put together. I have my radio show, which I do every week, which has been running for 20 years now in Bangalore, and we are the longest running dance music magazine show in the world. So it's phenomenal. So I have that on Thursdays to record, and that takes 4 hours, and that is 10 different sections of music. There's summer sounds, there is trendy tunes, which is a little more underground, there is funky, that's future sound of house, there's main room madness, which is a little more main room. So that takes a lot of research. Everything, you know, technology. I have a DJS, I have SP16 Torias, I have a push. So this technology that we are working on constantly, now with all the virtual DJ come with separating sounds and creating your own acapellas and stuff. So we've been working on that. So technology is a huge stimulation, and technology needs to be a part of your arsenal. So that is really important as well. You need to be getting on top of what is next in terms of technology, in terms of your music, and still retaining the connect with what you were in the past in terms of your soul and what you like in music. It's an endless career, but it just requires a lot of passion, hard work, dedication, which most people are finding it hard to do because there is no money in it. There is no instant popularity. There is nothing to look forward to. But I mean, if you see no other way, I mean, when I started DJing in the first year, people asked, what are you going to do next year? So I finished BCom and I started to DJ, and like, what are you going to do next year? I was like, I'm going to DJ. And then when I got married, people said, oh, if you get married, people won't come to hear your music. So I was one of the first DJs in the country to get married. It's like, okay, I got married. People still came. You have a kid, people will not come. Oh, the people came. Second kid, people still came. You know, so I was just going and doing things first and not ever worrying about what people thought about it outside, because it all came back to the music. So it's really important to understand that it all comes back to the music. No doubt you need to have like a balance between music and a personal life, but that I don't have anymore because my kids are all grown up now and they are in college. So it went back to me just sitting 24 hours with music. And, you know, for a little while, of course, when they were growing up, I had to play football with them, tuck them into bed, take them to church, dinners, this, that, whatever. And then once they've grown up, there's no more things to worry about. So it's back fully into the music.
And something very, I don't think most of the audience know that you have two kids and they actually share the same birthday 2 years apart from each other. That's phenomenal. I mean, even you're thinking about it, even your deck A and deck B are synced. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's in beat. What is their reaction? They have a superstar DJ dad. What is their feedback? You know, what is their take on your career?
You know, when I used to tell my daughter when she was really small, you can't waste that food, because when I started, I used to eat one meal a day. I used to eat just one burger and a Coke at 4 o'clock in the evening. And that's how I used to survive because I didn't have money. Mm-hmm. And I was working for free to learn the job. And now you have all these pastas and this and that and all these things there and you're refusing to eat. And you know, they used to say among themselves, and they were like 3 and 4 and 5 and whatever. Mm-hmm. He has to make up all these stories just to make it dramatic. There was nothing like that that happened. So, they didn't even want to believe it. Oh my God. But later on, my daughter wrote an essay in a college and she chronicled the whole thing so beautifully. And she actually retained all those things I said to her, but they never said it back to me. Wow. That, you know, that we are listening and we acknowledge and we believe. So even once we had this casual conversation, I said, you know, I went to London, I want to buy these records. And some of these old records are 3 times more expensive than the newer records. So the guy in the fair in London said, go back and put all your old records in the safest place because they're a treasure, mate. So I said, okay. And I came back and I told them, you know, whatever I have here is just a treasure. It has, you can't even put a value to it. So my son tells me, okay, then we should just sell it. But that's when they were really small. You know, they've grown up to understand what it all means. And they have their own, you know, how kids are. They have their own very reserved manner. And they're just not going to go goo, gaga, or everything.
Do they have any requests from their friends to get on a guest list if they're not even the club age?
My daughter doesn't even come to my parties. If there's a New Year party, if I'm doing one big one, she will make me buy her tickets and she'll go to the other opposite one.
Oh my God.
And I respect that. My son will come because he likes to be with me. He'll come. But I mean, he also has very different taste in music. He's listening to Pink Floyd and Al Stewart, a lot of these alternate new bands, which I don't even know about, but it's super cool. It's like funk jazz. So
that's great. DJ Ivan, this has been an amazing, amazing journey. I loved having a chat with you. I'm super duper happy to have you on the podcast. And I mean, I got to learn so much and I'm just waiting for you to come back to Pune, probably catch up and have that biryani with you at Blue Nile. So whenever you're in Pune,
definitely,
you know, you have to hit me up and it's on me. And wish you all the success. Wish you all the good health. And I hope to see you again on the podcast soon.
Thank you for being so appreciative. And so, you know, this is my motivation. I've got so much of love from all over the country, from whoever I talk to, everybody listening to the music. And you just makes me want to come back every week. Unfortunately, Instagram will end this month. So there won't be any more Instagram. So we'll have to find another way to do it. But it's been an absolute pleasure. Nothing was planned. But most importantly, the people who tune in, you know, it's really hard. When I told one of the guys, I was like, man, I don't know how you sit and listen to your phone, look at your phone for 7 hours. So he said, you know what, Ivan, if you are standing there sweating in that room and giving energy and standing and dancing for 7 hours, me sitting in my couch or lying in my bed and watching on my phone is the least I can do for you in return. And that just put everything in perspective. And it was a huge, huge motivation for me to go back and do what I wanted to do.
Phenomenal, sir. Great love for you and, you know, much respect to you. And I think Pune loves you. I'm a Pune boy. And everyone I spoke to about, you know, DJ Ivan being on the podcast, everyone's like, wow, Ivan. And I'm pretty sure you have a lot of Pune friends, Pune DJ friends.
Yeah, much love to all of them. And they're a very restless but beautiful music community. I've always found that about them. It's like they can't quite get people to go in the direction they want to go with them. I mean, there are people, but not enough numbers. Mm-hmm. To support them and talent they all have. So there's always this conflict where they have to go back and play music they don't want to play.
Yeah.
And it's sad because they're so talented. So every time I come there, I'm like trying to tell them, come on, keep pushing the great music. And you know, and it's not from now. I mean, you've had a culture of some phenomenal DJs. Of course, there are guys that have lasted through all the years and still rocking it, but right through, even the newer ones, everybody is so music savvy, but I think they just don't get enough opportunities to play to bigger audiences or more people, because I don't know. I mean, you would be able to explain it better, but don't you think it's something like that? I feel
yes, we kind of have to succumb to what the, you know, the crowd wants. We personally, I mean, for us personally, we're making sure that we're taking a stand and pushing only the music that we want. But again, I mean, many people don't have the opportunity.
Because you need sufficient numbers at the end of the day to make it count for or a club and everything. And
we've been lucky. We've been lucky to be backed up by some good venues who support our music. So you know, so I mean, it's something where it's in the works. But definitely.
But yeah, it's definitely evolved a lot more than it was, and you've got some phenomenal underground clubs now and stuff like that. But anyway, you need more people to come into the scene and make it bigger and better than it ever was. And I'm sure post lockdown, everybody will want to come out. You know, all guns blazing.
Me for sure. I'm just waiting for the bars and everything to open so we can get back to doing what we do the best. And I think that's just playing music.
Yeah, and my love to everybody in Pune and all over India and the world and wherever the podcast is going. And Breakthrough is doing some amazing things. I heard your podcast with Dave because he sent it to me and it was really interesting. So I look forward to this one.
So all my listeners, our podcast is being heard in over about 58-60 countries. So if you guys haven't heard of DJ Ivan, please head over to his Instagram. His Instagram is @DJIvanIndia. Please go check out his music. Please go check out this amazing artist and share this podcast to as many people as you guys can. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Rod. My pleasure.
Cheers. And that was the episode, guys. Thanks for tuning into the Breakthrough Podcast. I'm getting mad love from all of you guys from the fraternity. Continue sharing, but definitely consider subscribing, following, liking, doing all that good stuff. This definitely helps me a lot.